107 FM Talk 106.5 at Mobile Mornings on this Wednesday. Glad to have you along. Text line, phone line, same number, 343-0106, 343-0106. I'll take a second, too, to remind you about the podcast page on fmtalk1065.com. If you want to go get shows a la carte style, just click podcast. Better yet, though, subscribe over at iTunes or Stitcher, or you can get them through Spotify. Go tune in radio app that you use to listen to the station. You can also get the podcast through there as well. And let me just take a second to say thank y'all. The podcast numbers have been pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Pretty awesome. And that means a lot to me because it's a way that I quantify what we're doing and how y'all are receiving it. And it's been awesome. Y'all are great. So keep it up. Keep downloading those podcasts, sharing those podcasts, and subscribe at iTunes or Stitcher or anywhere else. And make sure to give us, whether it's stars or thumbs up or whatever the hokey rating system is, give us as many as possible.
And
we
don't
appreciate
forget
it.
Twitter. The podcasts have their own Twitter account.
FM Talk Pods.
Right.
Pods.
So that way
Twitter.
You can follow that account and then set your alerts. And so then your podcast will personally arrive to you.
There you go. What she said. All right. Y'all keep it up. Thank you very, very much. All right. It is a Wednesday. That's when we check in with our buddy Jeff Poore from Lanyap, Breitbart, Yellowhammer News, host of his own radio show, which he's cursing me for, at WVNN up in Huntsville, now that he's having to every day get on and talk to folks. Actually, I hear great things. So, Jeff, appreciate you being on with us.
Yeah, thanks for the curse of radio, Sean.
It's what I'm here for, man. You're now infected. A lot to talk about here. And first, let's start off in Washington as we're talking about the shutdown. And you asked this question in an email to us. Would you know government shutdown if you didn't watch the news? That's a good question for a lot of folks.
Yeah, I think a lot of people, that's where you really sway public opinion when the shutdown starts impacting your life directly. So when we talk about things like income tax returns not coming in on time, which apparently won't be a problem, people fly, the TSA, is that impacting enough people to make a difference? All the things you expect your federal government to do, when those things start getting impacted, that's when people start calling their congressman or asking questions, and you see public opinion waver. But right now, I mean, we're 3 weeks into this thing. I know some people are really taking it on the chin from it, but I don't know that enough people are to really force things going in one direction or another.
Yeah, okay. I think it works this way, and I think the duration of this partial government shutdown will be its undoing as well, meaning that if it goes on for 2 or 3 days or a week, you're right. I think a lot of people aren't really impacted, don't see anything. They're not going to turn up the heat on their legislators. You can even, unless you have an anecdotal reason, but the more days that go on, you have a better chance of having your own personal reason you want the government back online. You know, folks here, of course, with the Coast Guard issue here, something we've been talking about, a lot of people with Coast Guard in Mobile. Also, I think about long term. For example, spring break comes around. I want to take the kids to, I don't want to give this away if they're listening, but the Grand Canyon. You know, if I want to go out there, the Grand Canyon National Park, and it's closed down. So, I mean, it takes time, for wherever it is. It's going to apply differently to different Americans. But after, if this goes on months, it will probably affect somebody in one way or another, right?
I think so. But, I mean, that just remains to be seen. Do enough people go to the Grand Canyon for spring
break? Or whatever
right.
National park.
Yeah. Do enough people go spend spring breaks and vacations at the Great Smoky Mountains?
Maybe that's just me.
But is that enough on the overall count? So when you poll it, what does that look like? We're kind of in an uncharted territory here, so I don't know the answer to that question. But I think how this thing resolves itself lies in knowing how that, when that point comes, when the government shutdown starts really taking its toll on the public, then I think you see one side or another have to come and figure something out.
Okay, so here was a theory that was we were discussing the other day on the midday show, and like your take on it, that maybe if this breaks, the way it breaks is congressional Republicans break with the president and side with Democrats to get the government back open. Do you, I mean, because right now I don't see anything out of Schumer or Pelosi that makes me think they're going to negotiate at all. I don't see anything out of President Trump that makes me think he's going to negotiate at all. Maybe the path, I mean, I'm not saying it's going to happen, but if there was a path, does that seem probable?
Not right now. The reason I say that is Republicans have stuck together this long. And, I mean, the fact that they've done it this long, I mean, usually Republicans are the first to cave, right? Mm-hmm. I think that if you look around and you look at, you know, you just kind of watch these trends in the media and who's talking, I think Pelosi's losing support. I think that there are people on the left that may say, why are we impacting so many people's lives over $5 billion? I mean, we're at a point of brinkmanship here. There's no question about it. But I wouldn't bet on the Republicans doing that just because we're day 24 into this, or day 25 now, and they haven't folded yet. They're sticking together. What does that tell you, you know, that they've gotten this far, that, you know, one side or another? So Democrats, if I'm betting right now, it may be close to 50-50, but I'm giving a slight edge to the Democrats being the first to cave.
Well, it's interesting to sit back, and this is one of those ride down the roads and mull this over. Which constituency will be the loudest to their representatives? You know, it's interesting to think about, because if the idea is on the Republican side, it's stand with Trump, stand with Trump. If on the Democrat side, it's, hey, like you said, this is $5 billion. And there's all these other things that you would imagine people that vote for Democrats think things that are done in government are important, maybe more than Republican voters. And they would say, hey, it's worth the trade out. Y'all get it back online. If he gets $5 billion, then that's fine. You make a good point.
Let me add this to it. There's a lot of new Democratic blood in Congress. And these freshman members want to hit the ground running. They want to be doing stuff. They want to be passing stuff. They want to be, you know, serving their people. Right now, we're at the stalemate. We're at the shutdown. I think if you look really close, and you'll find it, some of these freshman members of Congress, and I'm not talking about the Alexandria Ocasio-Cortezes or any of the, you know, the people that get all the media attention, but some of these other freshman members that knocked off these longtime Republican incumbents are that took the place of these Republicans that retired. They want to be doing stuff. They want to be serving their people. They're not getting that opportunity right now. And that's where I think there's starting to be a little bit of a – Democrats have a little bit of weakness, and Pelosi will have to address that at some point.
I mean, so you don't even think it is going to come grassroots, and it's not that their constituents are going to be on the, you know, on the blower to them saying, hey, get this thing back open. It's going to be the actual desire of these members of Congress to show that they're doing something that may be the reason for a deal.
Well, here's another thing to think about. Republicans, the Republicans that were weak, the Republicans that were vulnerable, they lost. The ones that were worried about Trump, that were worried about, you know, things like a government shutdown, they were the ones that either retired or lost. And that's why I think you look around the House of Representatives, and there's certainly a few defectors, maybe 8 or 9, I think, but that's just a very small, small portion of the Republican caucus in the House. I think the real vulnerable ones that would be normally worried about a government shutdown impacting their reelection chances were the ones that either didn't run or lost.
All right, we come back from the break. I want to talk more about Washington, because while other parts of government were shut down, not the process of doing, you know, hearings, and we heard a lot yesterday about who would be the new Attorney General, William Barr. We'll talk about that. Also, the possibly anticlimactic Russia probe from Mueller. That and a whole lot more with Jeff Poor right here on FM Talk 106.5. FM Talk 106.5 and Mobile Mornings. Glad to have you along on this Wednesday. Text line open at 343-0106. Continuing our conversation with Jeff Poor, with Lanyap, also Yellowhammer News, which I've some great stuff on Yellowhammer lately from Jeff, also Breitbart, and you can listen to him on WVNN. The shift is the lazy man shift in the afternoon, right?
Yeah, something like that. It feels like a 10-hour a day job, though.
It is, man. It is. But I'm excited for you. I want to talk a couple more things out of Washington, then we'll switch back here to Sweet Home, Alabama. Okay, so yesterday, the Barr hearings, it seemed... Now, I didn't get to hear all of it because I was busy here, but it seemed to be a lot more civil than maybe if you go back in time to even a Sessions confirmation or a Supreme Court nomination.
I mean, it still had a few of its moments, and I think people were really looking at how it pertained to Russia and the Robert Mueller probe. But it was nothing like this this Brett Kavanaugh process went through.
It was. It seemed a lot more. Civil. And is that just because there's less at stake, or have Democrats tired of the attack? What do you give it here? Why?
No, I do think there's less at stake. I think that's definitely a huge part of it. But I the cameras weren't all on that. Now the cable news cameras were, but it wasn't TV drama. I do think there's kind of a wink and a nod going on that right now they're going through the... This is sort of a formality. Now that Mitch McConnell has an expanded majority in the Senate, you're not counting on the possibility of a Jeff Flake or Bob Corker stalling things at the last minute, or you don't need as many votes, and it's not as razor thin. I think he gets through, and I think one of the reasons that he gets through and we're not seeing the hype like we have for previous hearings, especially at the beginning of Trump's term with his cabinet, is because the Senate's more Republican controlled, so it's not close. So why put up that hard of a fight?
Does that leave y'all with a hollow feeling that the fight would not be based on the actual nominee to an office, but based on the possible political outcomes? That's real stuff, man.
The possible chances of slowing it down.
Yeah,
I mean, keep in mind
it's not about the person. It's about whether they think they can win at a certain point or not.
Well, yeah, if they want to stop a nominee, I think they would stop all of Trump's nominees if they were able to, but they're unable to, so they just don't have the votes. So save your powder, save it for another day, live to fight another day. That seems to be the kind of the Senate Democrats right now, because they have the only thing they really have is that 60-vote majority rule that you need 60 votes to get anything done, but... As far as them doing stuff, as far as them getting any of their bills pushed through or getting something stopped in committee, they just don't have the numbers.
You mentioned the Mueller probe. What's your take on Jonathan Carl earlier this week saying that the outcome could be anticlimactic here for the report? Does that mean, number one, it's coming out? When is it coming out, and what about that?
I think that these leaks are telling. I think that we've seen the worst of it. That the Manafort and Cohen and all these other sort of B-list figures around the Trump campaign that got punishment, I think that that was the worst of it. And Democrats had to be cautious because they played this thing up. They were hoping this was going to be the magic bullet that got Trump's presidency, and that he the Mueller. We've all been waiting for this, but it seems to me now that there's sort of these leaks. They're kind of trying to poison the well a little bit and downplay expectations that the media's not really really ran with that, but they're leaking to ABC's Jonathan Carl, who I think is a pretty stand up reporter. There may be a few nuggets in there for the real geeks, but it's not going to be something that you could take to a congressional committee and start the process of impeachment.
All right, bring it back home here to the state of Alabama, and we talked on Monday when you were in Montgomery for the inaugural not just Governor Ivey, but many other state office holders. I want your reaction here, because we talked before the speech. I thought it was a pretty good speech from Ivey. What's your take? Where are you scored?
It was a decent speech. Just being there was a kind of a sense of optimism. You have a lot of new members in the Alabama State Legislature, so there's a lot of the fresh blood. There's a lot of people looking to, legislate, do something they haven't had the opportunity to do. It's all new. We're at the first year of a quadrennium. The one takeaway I had, though, that kind of caught my ear was that she's talking about policy. You don't usually use that platform and inauguration address to talk about infrastructure, gas tax, prison reform, and those things.
Right.
You say that for the state of the state. So I it does kind of push the legislature in a direction, but it, to me that, you know, I guess that shows where Ivy's emphasis is going to be in the coming months.
It stood out to me as well, Jeff, that she was talking about specifics in an inaugural speech, which, yeah, number one, you could say, well, she's, you know, she's 2 years in and she's not even getting started. She's just continuing with business, and here's where the next 4 years are going. Also, like you said, even though the legislature has most of the power in Montgomery, you do have the bully pulpit. You are the governor. You can, you know, put people on notice and make sure that the citizens know here's what's happening, here's what will be in front of your elected representatives.
Right. She has the ability to twist a lot of arms. I mean, well, what member of the legislature is not going to take Kay Ivey's phone call?
Right.
She could talk, and she, I mean, she does have some small powers, but she has enough power, I think, by virtue of being governor of Alabama, to change some minds in the legislature. I don't get a sense that there's a much contention between the legislature and the governor's office like we've had in previous years. I think they're on board on some of the more broader things, but maybe the details are where the fight's going to be. We haven't seen many details. We've just been talking about big things like gas tax, like lottery, like the prison reform or ethics reform. We haven't seen the specifics. That's where you may start seeing a little bit of this back and forth and make it a little more contentious. But right now, I think coming out of this election, everybody seemed to run on a lot of the same ideas. If you're on the Republican side, ask Kay Ivey.
And the hashtag Alabama politics discussion yesterday was the change in chief of staff in Governor Ivey's office. Talk about that.
Well, so she, you know, this had been kind of rumored for a while. I wasn't sure what to make of it. I think right after Katie Britt got the BCA job, that sort of freed Congressman Bonner up to do something else. And this had been rumored that Steve Pelham was going to take a job at Auburn University. No one was really sure what. But Steve Pelham being her longtime chief of staff, going back to her lieutenant governor days, Joe Bonner's coming in and he's out. Not a huge surprise. Just,
I mean, he's been a chief of staff. He's been a chief of staff before at a federal level. I mean, he could do this.
Right. He was. Joe Bonner was chief of staff for Sonny Callahan, mm-hmm. press secretary as well. So it's not that he's just coming into this as a, you know, this is a ceremonial position. He knows how to make things work. But and here's something else to think about. I haven't really thought about this until just now. Joe Bonner launched his congressional campaign from a chief of staff position, working for Sonny Callahan. Does this sort of line him up to run for governor someday? It gets him in the mix. It gets him in that Montgomery kind of, you know, the it's a weird world in Montgomery. But does it sort of make him more familiar with the money in Montgomery and who you need to know if you're going to launch a gubernatorial bid? So I think there's a lot of things there that are a little bit of intrigue there for a few of your listeners that care about this stuff.
All right. Well, you're playing up to my questions too in the email you sent us. What does this mean for Southwest Alabama? You know, I've been joking that Governor Ivey having her pre-inauguration party down at the Gulf was good for us. Oh, she knows where we are. Now with Joe Bonner being Southwest Alabama guy, that he's there, that these are good things for Mobile-Baldwin County extended area.
I never thought of Ivey as a one that has really had any loyalty to the Birmingham business community or to, you know, that Montgomery-Birmingham Huntsville corridor, like a lot of governors in the past have, given she's come from a rural place, and she's made that clear during her campaign. She visited a lot of the counties, and I followed her around to some of these little tiny towns. You know, governors have done that from time to time, but campaigning there, they tend to focus on where all the votes are. She didn't do that. I think she won't maybe put a specific focus on Mobile, but it won't be like in years past where, you know, people in Montgomery and Birmingham look at Mobile and Baldwin counties as Venezuela or, you know, Mexico
right.
or something. It's just it's a strange world. Where I would watch that geography and the divisions, I think that's in the legislature. We're under one party rule right now in Alabama, but if you're looking for like where the back and forth will be, where divisions sort of line up, that line sort of drawn probably somewhere between Evergreen and Greenville. You know, going up state, because the North Alabama delegations and the South Alabama delegations tend to kind of work together in a way, and that's probably where you're going to find your your real divisions in Montgomery.
Great news, hopefully, for Southwest Alabama. Jeff, if people want to reach out and find out more about what you're talking about or writing about, where do they go?
It's twitter.com/Jeff_Poor.
Always great to talk to Jeff, and we're coming right back. We'll take your calls at 343-0106. Thank you, Kane. 836 FM Talk 106.5 and Mobile Mornings. Glad to have you here. Phone number 343-0106. Y'all say hello to Mitch McConnell over at McConnell Automotive. And Mitch, let's talk about those end-of-the-year closeout sales and those deals you had. They sounded fantastic. Are they still a thing in 2019?
Yeah, Sean, you know, everybody's talking about FOMO, and I think that's the funniest thing. I've got an 18-year-old daughter. She says it all the time, fear of missing out. And the cool thing that's happening at our dealership, Sean, is that we can still give people the kind of deals we were in December. And an example, buddy, is these Sierra trucks. We've got about seven of them left. And I priced one for a friend yesterday, Sean, and he was blown away because it was about the same price he was about to pay for a used 2017 Z71, and we're talking about discounts that range about $12,000 off the sticker price. So my invitation, everybody listening, is don't wait, because these last few aren't going to be here very much longer. And Sean, the 2019 truck with that incredible tailgate and all that stuff is there for people to compare it to, and we want people to check it out as fast as they can. And McConnellAutomotive.com is our website to check the deals out before people show up at the store.
All right, Mitch, as always, we appreciate it, and we'll come see you soon.
Y'all have a great day, Sean.
Will do. Mitch McConnell checking in from McConnell Automotive, just east of 65 on Dolphin. 838, and let's talk some state. You said during our conversation with Jeff, a couple questions out there going forward. The questions I've got right now, and I'd like to hear from you and all of y'all as well, the next 4 years, I think the point where Governor Ivey talked about specifics during an inaugural speech stood out to me, because usually inaugural speeches, everything's great and
right,
we love you, and she did some of that, which is good, but then she got into stuff like the infrastructure, which equals gas tax, contentious issue, got into prison reform. Who during their inaugural gets into prison reform? I said, good job, Kay Ivey.
I mean, my thoughts on that, and this is what I wanted to talk to Jeff about, is the fact that she is embarking on her first full four-year term, and so she's wanting to get out in front of it. Because if you think about it, the last time we heard from her when she was launched into this role is basically how do you fix the image of what has happened at the gubernatorial level, at the governor's level? How do you fix it? And so I think that she was brought in to, yes, do the job, but also to help us from being in the funny papers.
I think so. Okay, and I think the first two, I would argue, though, that the first 2 years, finishing out Bentley's term,
yes,
I think even the term she used was steadying the ship of state.
Very much so.
Just, you know, like we all said, oh, thank goodness, but somebody in there who's not going to screw it up. But now, hey, it's you, and what are you going to do? It's not just holding fast, you know, or doing kind of the basic of what you're supposed to. How are we going forward? And there's some big issues facing the legislature in 2019.
I think it's all about strategy for her. And I think it's important that she convey and relay to, you know, residents who she is as a governor of her first full term, four-year term. That is a big deal, because the same way you start is the same way you finish. And so before, she was always, there was always an asterisk next to her name,
sure,
as to how she, you know, got to that role. But now she's like, hey, here's
who
I
hers.
Am.
Yeah, this is,
right,
I mean, she was duly elected.
Absolutely. And I think that's good for her, too. So whatever you thought before, now she's saying, hey, this is a clean slate, and here's what I really want to focus on. So breathing new life into, you know, the office. And I think her moves are strategic. You know, we talk about Joe Bonner this morning. I mean, I don't think it's coincidental that he was, you know, hired December 1st of 2018, and now it's January 2019, and he's in a new role. So everything is going to be, to me, just as an outsider looking in, the strategy is going to be very apparent with moves that will hopefully benefit even more people, that it not just be, you know, leveraged for a select group, but more people will be able to benefit. And I think that's a good thing for the new year.
Well, and I think you would imagine that KIV wants to be elected governor again. Mm-hmm. So going forward, and there's a lot of opportunities here, and there's a lot of new blood. You heard, Jeff, you've heard many people say the opportunities because so many new members of the legislature up there. I think, yes, it can be good. I think already, though, they've been in Montgomery. This idea that they just show up March 3rd or 5th or whatever it is, and they haven't done any discussion is wrong. They've been doing it since they were elected. Mm-hmm. This last weekend before the inauguration, all the members of the House and Senate were up there. They're all getting politic. They're trying to get corralled into this camp or that camp. I'm sure there's a bunch of them that go in. I think it's 34%, I think, of the House and Senate are new. Mm. 34% are House and Senate are new. So I'm sure they're going in full of blank and vinegar. And they're going to go and, rice, wine, and vinegar.
Right.
That they're going to go in and get things done. And there's probably some of that has been governed, and I don't mean it, I mean little g governed, backed by members that have been there a long time, say they're there, that's cute, but here's how we do things in Montgomery. But they're, as much as the old guard will push the new blood down and limit or govern it, I think the new blood will push the old guard a little bit to get some things moving. And you've got, once again, funding issues are always the big deal. I would love to hear that they're going to tackle the earmarking in the state budget. I would be very surprised if they did. I mean, they've talked about it before, not gotten it done. 93% of the general fund is earmarked. So really, when they get to debating, think about this, y'all. When they're debating money and what they're going to spend and not spend in Montgomery, it's 7% of the general fund budget. Mm. It's not 100%. 93% is already dictated. So all this goings on is over 7%. Out of that 7%, you got to figure out how to tackle. Number one, I would like to see the state. I know this is tough because I'm also a guy that does not want to see any kind of. I would love to see a reduction in taxes. But the state ought to figure out a way to bank some money. Look at what the city of Mobile does, right? Banking some money. Mm-hmm. The state needs to do more of that. So, because there are going to be bad times again. Right now, the receipts from taxes are good. The economy's doing great.
And that's the best time to make a move when things are going well.
That's right. To figure out how to either bank the money or in this time loosen the amount of earmarking going on in the budget. So down the road when things get tough, they can use money where it needs to be used most going forward. So and then they're going to talk about, okay, well, we need money. We need money for infrastructure, gas tax issue, and we need money for prisons, which, where is that going to come from? Is it going to come from a state lottery? I mean, this is, I've asked this a couple times, and Todd Stacey yesterday, I mean, he's out of Montgomery, and he said, man, I finally took your idea that we've been talking about, and I'm now starting to hear people in Montgomery talk about it.
Being proactive instead of reactive.
Right, but the problem is, if the lottery mechanism is what's going to fund the prison or the building of the new prisons, because if y'all haven't been keeping up with this, there's a chance that you could have federal receivership of our prisons. It's not building new prisons for fun. It's the fact if federal government comes in like they did in California, here's how it works. Receivership comes in. You have to, because we are way over 100% capacity, and then we have some mental health issues.
Which
and
is a big issue just in itself.
Absolutely. So, but in California when this happened maybe a decade ago, federal government comes in, tells California they're over their limit, tells California they have to release people, and they kind of had to go through the list and just release people from prison that had not served their term. They had to release people, and then the state of California had to spend the money to fix the problems. So the federal government comes in, tells them to release people, then they have to spend the money. So that's the danger of a federal receivership of our prisons, that we Alabamians don't get to make those decisions. There's people released into our state that don't need to be out. At the same time, we have to spend the money. So the idea proactively, like you said, is to spend the money ahead of time, build out the prisons, and be ready for this. Problem is, who wants to pay for prisons? Nobody does.
Right.
And even in a lottery capacity, I've been saying it for a long time, if that's where the money needs to go, that's a great idea. But the problem is, human nature, if you have a referendum up for a lotto in the state of Alabama, I'm just telling you, we get a DeLorean time machine, Back to the Future style, and you fly this through. First time you run a lottery bill through that's for the kids, it's for schools, it's
Marty
for the
McFly.
Children.
Okay.
It passes.
Okay.
You come back and you get in the DeLorean time machine and you run that same lotto, but same lottery, everything the same except this one funds the prison expansion. It fails. It's the same lottery, but because of the idea of people will vote for it because it's for the kids, but if it's for prisons or road and bridges, I don't think it gets voted for.
I have so many things I want to say. First of all, going back to what you're saying about California. So you think about it. People who have been victimized are victimized all over again when these people are let out early. Mm-hmm. That is such a huge issue, and that should make you so mad when you think about it. Secondly, we talk about the new freshmen coming in, okay? Whether at the state level or the national level. My thoughts are this. I love new people bringing in new and diverse thoughts. However, I think you need to know your job before you start to try to, you know, just change everything. I think it's important, and I mean that really, especially on the national level, because you're hearing all these names come out, you know, these new freshmen who are just making all the change.
Yeah, they're going to tell everybody how it's done.
Lord. Oh, and so I think that what you do is you bring in that new, fresh, those awesome ideas, but also you lean on those who have been there long enough, who know the ropes. And if you work together, that's a concerted effort that everybody benefits from. But if the vintage people, you know, they want to hold on to, but this is the way it's always been, that's a problem. And if the new people coming in want to say, well, I'm here to change everything on day one, that's a problem.
Absolutely. And so maybe the two work together. I mean, you think about if you're forging a piece of metal, a knife or a sword, it comes in glowing red hot, right? It's red hot. But what happens? It has to be tempered.
Ooh.
Has to be tempered, be that through hammer blows, be that through ice bath of cold water for it. You have to take that red hot metal and temper it before it becomes stronger. And that may be it's off the top of my head. It may be a decent analogy for what happens in Montgomery,
Start
in Washington.
Start with a cup of coffee.
There's that too. You can do that. All right, 8:47. We'll be right back. This is Mobile Mornings on FM Talk 106.5. Fifty-two FM Talk 106.5 and Mobile Mornings on this Wednesday. Sean Sullivan, Kelly Finley, Dalton will be back with us soon. Ben, good point there. Ben said, "Hey, with the big time connections to Wilcox County, I hope Governor Ivey can find some money in the budgets for roads and bridges there." Yes, although I can make that argument. Wilcox County, we can make that argument for Hale County, Marengo County, heck, Washington County. Supermom has said this a couple times during the speech about Governor Ivey not laying out her intentions during the campaign. She says, why wouldn't Ivey have said her intentions during the campaign? I probably would have given her my vote. And we're referencing the fact that Governor Ivey, during this inaugural speech, laid out some pretty specific policy ideas, not down to the nitty-gritty, the line item, but getting into questions about infrastructure and prisons building out. Mark says, will the prisoners be able to buy lotto tickets and pay to fund the prison?
I wish we were in a situation where we didn't, and I know it's, you may call it wishful thinking, but that all these efforts weren't being put into the prisons, but more into our young people at a younger age, so that, you know, there's a better understanding of doing right and wrong, and having the leadership, and having the mentors, and having things for them to do, because it's a cycle. It truly is.
And they've done it. I'll say this, okay, I'm going to compliment former Governor Dr. Bentley, who
was there
on the cell phone during, you know, there in the grandstand during Governor Ivey's speech. He did one of the good things. He did a couple good things. So I'm not monolithic that he failed as governor, but he launched that prison task force even a little earlier than I think other governors would. Had people like Senator Cam Ward start looking into this, and some of the things that have been done in the state with trying to keep people out of the prisons, you know, that are nonviolent offenders, trying to redirect those things. Also, Cam Ward was working with programs to try to keep people from doing wrong in the first place. Yeah. And those things, absolutely, I agree with you, are important. The problem is, the bell is tolling right now. And I don't know, I'll talk to some people that tell me that a federal receivership thing could happen at any point. You know, you got Judge Myron Thompson talking about this. Some people say, yeah, it's just kind of a boogeyman. It really probably won't happen. You know, I've got to go with the danger of having this federal receivership and looking at what happened in California and saying, okay, I need some honest answers. What is the level of compliance that we need to meet in Alabama to keep that from happening, and how much does that cost? I mean, maybe that's just the private sector guy in me is, okay, how will this really happen? And if it does, how much money does it cost us? You know, and so when we figure that out, then you decide, then you weigh that on one side, and the other side you go, here's what it would cost to build new prisons. And kind of the undercurrent that a lot of people don't talk about, I think I brought this up the other day when we were talking about the wall, is in conversations I've had about building these new prisons. Now, these are people that believe in building the new prison, so take it with a grain of salt. But they said overriding cost in Department of Correction is manpower, is corrections officers.
Huh.
And they said the new state-of-the-art, because I asked, why don't y'all just add on to the prisons? Let's just put another wing on it or something like that and expand the space.
Fair question.
Right? That's like what normal people would do. They said, here's the thing, that our major cost, they were telling me, are corrections officers, and they said if we build these new prisons the way they're designed, you know, better high-tech, more bars, more concrete, all these things, that we can have fewer corrections officers working to cover more inmates. And that long-term would be the cost savings for the state. I mean, you pay more up front. Mm-hmm. You buy the new car instead of the instead of fixing the old car, and the new car, while it costs you more and you're making notes on it for a while afterwards, maybe you get better gas mileage, it's a better ride, something like that.
But what happens when the new car is all digital and then all of a sudden it has a power
outage? Why'd you throw that?
Because what you're saying is, I mean, the correctional officers, you know, work very hard, right? And so now you're saying less people to pay because the machinery will do the job.
Yeah. I mean, is the job of the state to make sure people are employed, or is the job of the state to make sure the inmates are housed?
That's a good question.
I mean, it's not nice, but I'm not here to be nice. I'm here to just ask.
No, you would never be accused of that. But I think maybe we start at the lower level and keep these people from escaping work release programs as often.
Yeah, let's make it more work and less release. Work release.
Yes.
James says this. I want to tackle this quickly before we run out of time. James says, $40 million for a prison or $40 for a tent. Let them serve time Sheriff Joe style. He's talking about Sheriff Joe Arpaio. All right, James, so I looked into this. Here's another nuance of this prison discussion. When you keep prisoners in a tent camp, back to the personnel cost, because corrections officers are the leading cost there, they've done the numbers, James, actually cost those folks in Arizona and Sheriff Joe more per inmate to keep them there than it does in the Alabama prisons. So when you take away the bars and the concrete, see, the bars and the concrete allow fewer people to watch more inmates. When you do the tent camp thing, it actually, and the breakdowns are out there, James, is really interesting. It costs, and I get Cam Ward back on here. It was like almost, it wasn't completely double, but it was like another 80% as much per day to deal with inmates in Arizona in the tent camps than it did in the prisons in Alabama. So it's kind of a, I was like you, James, I'm not throwing shade here, because when I first saw the story, I said, yeah, why don't we put extensions on there? Why don't we just put the tents in? And then they brought the numbers to me and said, actually, so here's what it costs in Arizona per prisoner per day. Here's what it costs to keep them in prisons in you know, concrete and bars in Alabama. And it was much less in Alabama. So that was just kind of a weird wrinkle to it that I'm like you, James, I thought the same thing at first until somebody showed me the numbers and changed my mind.
What about stopping with paying the Wi-Fi so that there's no internet usage?
Yeah. That's, you know, the...
I mean, prisons should be prisons. You're not supposed to make it so great that people, they have to determine whether or not they want to stay in or not.
But they're arguing that the things that block those 3G signals, first of all, how the heck, we go through a whole nother show how they get the smartphones in there. But beyond that, there are some devices that can block that 3G coming in, but they cost money, and the state doesn't want to spend the money to get that, so...
I just think back
I wish
in
everything
our day,
was simple.
Prison was prison.
Yes.
Not, you know, an outdoor camp that you get three meals, three hots and a cot. You know what I mean?
I agree. All right. Mike Gallagher Show on the way next.
Stay out of prison.
Simple solution.
Free of charge.
From Mrs. Finley. Stay out of prison. Great solution. All right. I'll be back at noon today for Midday Mobile. Y'all have a great one.